Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Arm V8 Investor Presentation Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. If you require operator assistance at any time, please press star zero on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Monday, the 24th of March, 2014. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Ian Thornton. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. Welcome to this Arm Investor Relations call. My name is Ian Thornton, and I'm the Head of Investor Relations here at Arm. Today, we're joined by Matt Ramsay, the VP of Equity Research at Canaccord Genuity, and Nandan Nayampally, who's the VP of Marketing for our CPU group and has been responsible for the development of our Arm V8 processor product line. On Friday, we published a pre-recorded presentation given by Nandan on Arm V8, and if you haven't had a chance to listen to that, I'd recommend that you do that after this call. It's available on our investor relations website at www.arm.com/ir. So for today's call, we are going to be focusing on a Q&A between Matt and Nandan. We're not gonna be opening up the phone lines for these questions, but if you have a specific question that you'd like to be addressed, please send an email to myself and Phil at investor.relations@arm.com. And with that, Nandan, do you briefly want to give us a bit of an update on who you are and your background?
Thank you, Ian. So as previously announced, Nandan Nayampally, I'm the VP of Marketing for the CPU group here at Arm, and that means I'm in charge of the Arm processor roadmap. We also look out into the future for what technologies, what capabilities we need to develop, and naturally, generating all the outbound messaging and data for what the processors bring. In terms of my history, I've been with Arm for almost a decade, and it's been quite an excellent ride, starting with, in fact, the early days of TrustZone and the ARM11, through Big.LITTLE Technologies, and now here with Arm V8. Extremely exciting times. If you go a little bit further back, I actually cut my teeth and started off at AMD almost two decades ago on the, what became the Athlon processor. So, processors, very exciting and continue to be so.
Okay. Well, thanks, Nandan. Matt, do you want to just give us a little bit of your background and why you are here on this call today, and then maybe go straight to your first question?
Sure. Great. Thanks, Ian. Thanks, Phil, and the rest of the IR team for giving me the opportunity to host the call today, and of course, thanks for Nandan for making the time. My name is Matt Ramsay. I'm a semiconductor and communications technology analyst at Canaccord Genuity. Done a lot of work on Arm and Arm V8. My background, before coming to the sell side, I was actually a computer architect at AMD and at Sun Microsystems before that, so I have a bit of history in the space and have written a bit about Arm V8 and its applicability across a slew of end markets, including mobile and some new end markets like enterprise networking and server for Arm. So excited to host the call today. So I'll just jump right into Q&A, and again, if things come in during the call, to Ian or Phil's inbox, we'll try to incorporate as many of those questions as we can into the Q&A today to extract as much interesting information to the audience as we can. So again, I'll just jump right in. And then in my discussion with investors and sort of readings of blog and press reports about Arm V8, it seems everyone focuses just on 64-bit and ignores many of the other important features of the Arm V8 architecture. And obviously, an architecture is a lot more than just how many bits of addressing it supports. So I'd like you to maybe walk through, and you did a very good job, I think, in the prepared slides, some of the additional features of the Arm V8 architecture. But maybe you could walk through and quickly recap those here and maybe talk about the particular features that might be applicable to different tiers of end markets across the Arm licensing base.
Okay. So thanks, Matt. And what I'd start off with is, you're right, the architecture is not just, firstly, Arm V8 is not just 64-bit, and the architecture is not just the instruction set. So as we talked about in the presentation, it's kind of a contract between the hardware and software and what things need to be done together. It kind of defines them. This includes, obviously, the instruction set, the memory models, the software programmers view and what you can do with it, what do we do for debug, monitoring, etc. So if you put that in context and you look at ARMv8, as we talked about in the presentation, we started working on ARMv8 almost 7 years ago, and we were looking at what are the trends that were developing, right? So which are increase in concurrent programming. At that point, it was still a single core world. Now we have octa-cores increasing by the minute. We expected the need for security and privacy as the mobile devices became the primary compute device. Obviously, as we looked at things around the industry, not just in the mobile side, but around it, we would need higher levels of compute, not just in terms of the muscle that the processor brings, but what the architecture can do to accelerate. And obviously, the increasing memory needs. Now, if you look at that, the memory needs increasing, that's where actually 64-bit comes in. But if you step back and look at what else ARMv8 brings, firstly, there's a wealth of software that's already existing on ARM and 32-bit that has to run really well. So backward compatibility is key. And you can maintain backward compatibility while adding new feature sets. And this is actually where ARMv8 adds quite a lot of value. One, because concurrent programming and large multi-core programming has become important, ARMv8 adds some capabilities on more simplified interaction between them and synchronization between these processes, which makes it that much more interesting for things like the newer programming languages like Java 5, C++ 11, to make them more friendly, make more thread-safe software and easier from a programmer standpoint. Then you get to the next set of benefits on improving encryption routines for the constantly connected, secure, and private devices. So we introduced the AES and secure hash capability that actually is available not just in the 64-bit world, but in the 32-bit world. So you can actually have a very compact ARMv8 device that actually utilizes today's software assets with enhancements to improve encryption. And then beyond that, of course, we have the 64-bit architecture, which improves our capability of greater than 32 bits of virtual memory, which we'll certainly see in the higher spec devices. But we also increased the capabilities of the Neon multimedia instruction set and that actually improves, not just makes the Neon very scalable across both multimedia, but as well as scientific compute. So the ARMv8 architecture actually scales across very compact, you know, low footprint devices all the way up to very high compute intensive, high memory intensive devices for enterprise networking, server, and HPC.
That's a helpful summary. Just to dig into that a few points further, some of the questions that I get sometimes are, why would a processor or licensee migrate to ARMv8 if maybe the memory addressability or the memory constraints of 64-bit aren't something that they really need at that price tier or in that particular device? And it sounds like a lot of these features that you discussed there of ARMv8 are really applicable across a whole a broad spectrum of tiers of market segments, not just in where high memory is going to really be. Is that a fair assessment? And I mean, are there particular examples you could give maybe of companies or of scenarios where ARMv8 is really applicable in a lower memory or a lower cost environment?
Yeah, I think you've highlighted it well, right? So there is, if you look at V8, there's different markets will have different issues. The need for 64-bit is one, and the need for the other key benefits that you mentioned, I think, are common across a slew of devices. I think you've probably seen the discussion about $25 phone from Firefox at the Mobile World Congress, and that could actually still utilize the benefits of V8 without having to delve into 64-bit. And you say the the need for octa-core or larger multi-processing devices. Again, these are in low-cost markets, the mid-range markets, not ones that you'd consider very 64-bit intensive, if you will. But again, at the Mobile World Congress, you saw multiple ARM partners announce products based off of the Cortex-A53 for the lower footprint, lower cost markets. And they're all trying to utilize the benefits of the backward compatibility while incrementally improving the experience with security, privacy, and more, right? And more efficient power programming. So that's kind of a high-level view. Obviously, where 64-bit comes is in the larger screen devices where there is a greater need for memory addressability. But having said that, you can see even devices today that are capable of doing 64-bit still using less than 4 gigabytes of memory. I think there is a natural tendency to improve a stack that actually starts operating or a common software stack that works across the smartphone, the tablet, and even higher-end devices. So you actually simplify the programmers to the app stores, things like that, as you move across a set of devices with a common look and feel.
Right, right. That makes a lot of sense. Obviously, mobile today is ARM's largest end market for royalties. So we've written a bit about ARMv8's applicability to all price tiers of that mobile market, and from what you just discussed, it sounds like that your view is similar to that. I guess the next question that comes to mind then is one of your more prominent licensees announced a 64-bit product coming to market with that in the fall, and since some of the other named partners, Qualcomm, Samsung, MediaTek, others have announced roadmaps. So with ARMv8 generating higher royalty potential than the prior architectures, investors often ask for views on the not only the potential long-term penetration of V8 into the mobile market, but also, I guess, the speed at which you expect that penetration to happen. So would love to hear your thoughts on your interactions with your customer base, how those roadmaps are coming, and what you sort of see the progression from where ARMv8 is today with essentially one customer having material shipments in the market towards broad applicability over the next several years in the mobile space.
Okay, so focused on mobile, I think what you've seen, at least over the last few months, is multiple silicon partners talking about not just roadmap, but also timelines for the devices. We do expect that there is a pull-through that is coming in, again, coming from a common programmer's view, common software stack approach that you'd see from larger screen devices first, going to more of a premium handheld type market, and then transitioning further as you go to the same software stack, tracking down into more cost-effective devices for broader penetration. So I don't necessarily see us necessarily talking about a percentage of penetration, because certainly there's a strong case on the ARMv7 and the 32-bit world continuing for a while. But we do see the ARMv8 capabilities actually making it into a lot more devices outside of just the 64-bit capability.
That's interesting that you bring up the point that the ARMv7 and the ARMv8 architecture will sort of coexist for a while, and there's still some reasons for some processor vendors or maybe then their end OEM customers to continue on the V7 path. I sort of love to hear your thoughts on that, because you've done a great job articulating the benefits of V8 even outside of just 64-bit. But I guess what would be the reasons why a vendor or an OEM would sort of continue along the path that they were on V7 as opposed to adopting V8, other than sort of the migration cost from one to the other?
So given the number of markets we play in, and I would use mobile and consumer as a one whole, I guess, a common bucket, if you will. Certainly the cost of migration is something to consider, but also there's so many markets and sub-markets within it that have a much tighter design cycle and actually value a lot of the maturity of the existing architecture, software, and time to market. And you do see a lot of partners building on that by building products that they fully understand. There may not be a serious value for upsell for them, right? So it's a product that fits the need, it fits the cost profile, it fits the comfort level for what they're servicing. Besides, as I say, I think you might have seen this discussion before, there are over 350 partners we have today that already have ARMv7-based product. There are 20 partners today and probably 30 licensees we've seen ARMv8. Naturally, the scope for growth of that market is pretty high, but there's plenty of product that still solves day-to-day problems that you can build with.
That makes sense. I guess switching gears, one of the big attractions from investors' points of view, and I'm sure from yours as well, of the V8 architecture and some of the features that it brings is the applicability of ARM technology to additional markets where ARMs maybe had peripheral or almost zero market share in the past, things like server or enterprise networking, et cetera. And some of ARM's more recent presentations, even some data that Ian and the team have put together for investors, have talked about those new markets potentially being the same TAM, maybe say $20 billion by 2018 is the number that's been thrown out in some slide decks, and where ARM has roughly 5% market share today. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe you could talk about those end markets a bit. What are the key opportunities, but also the key hurdles to the ARM partnership gaining share in those markets versus some pretty entrenched incumbents? And then we can dive into maybe some discussions of what realistic market share is for those markets over the next 5-10 years in your view.
Okay. So I think the natural discussion I think you have is about the enterprise market, as you call it. In ARM, when we talk about enterprise, it's actually a broader statement. We do actually look at storage, including the hard disk drive type market as part of enterprise. We look at printing. We look at, obviously, server networking, so on and so forth. And if we just showcase the two main ones here, which would be server and networking. I would start with networking first because you've actually seen a lot of activity on the networking front. This, especially over the last few months, you might have seen discussions about the 16-core Cortex-A15-based platforms that have come out through Huawei HiSilicon as well as LSI. All demonstrating the capabilities that we talked about a few years back, more scalable, more power efficient, more cost effective solutions for the challenges of the networking space. I think you'll see we're already moving there with today's ARMv7 product, and V8 actually makes it that much more compelling and broader reaching into that market. If we then look at server, I think server is I wouldn't necessarily qualify it as a standalone market because it is evolving, right? Server as a standalone big iron may be a mechanism used so far, but what we see with the growth of cloud is networking and server start getting more interspersed, more closer together. And based on the types of workload, the types of use cases, the solutions also get tuned accordingly. If you can save a microwatt or a milliwatt per transactions and you have trillions of transactions, that's a big difference. So naturally, the benefits of ARM's business model as well as the solutions that its partners bring actually fit this very well. with that said, you know, we do see, just as, you know, the tablet market has eroded, or is eating into effectively the PC market, we do see the new approach to servers actually eating into this, the traditional approach to the enterprise server. And to that effect, I think we have been investing consistently into the ecosystem. This is not something new. We've been doing that for years. You can actually see the progress going through as well. In the ecosystem, we started the Linaro group to actually further the open source tooling cause. We've seen the partnership actually build more on top of it with the Linaro Enterprise Group for server, the Linaro Networking Group for targeted work at networking. And you're also seeing cloud service providers and companies like Facebook porting their virtual machines over to ARM. You're looking at a lot of the networking companies working on the ARM ecosystem. We have been working with virtualization vendors, et cetera, to move things like KVM, tested, optimized towards ARM. So overall, there's been a lot of movement towards it. Naturally, the hurdles are initially, it takes time to enter these markets. The software stack needs to mature. The tool chains need to mature. And certainly, you have seen some of the early forays making progress, but maybe at the moment being judged as not quite there. But I think overall, from all we see around the market, people like AMD have talked about their platforms. There are multiple other vendors talking about their platforms going in. We're actually seeing that the set of hurdles kind of reducing.
It's interesting you talk about the ecosystem. I think similar to Big Little, where chips were sort of first brought to market a little under a year ago, and folks sort of started to realize that the optimal performance and implementation of these new technologies like Big Little and V8 does require a significant amount of ecosystem, software, operating system, et cetera, support. I guess I'd love to hear more about, and you touched on a few of them there, but the software, not just the efforts that you and the ARM camp are making of ecosystem development, but some of the key software dependencies for ARMv8 to gain share within not just the markets that you mentioned, like enterprise networking and server, but also in the mobile space, whether that's operating system support, 64-bit optimized kernels from Android and Windows and maybe other vendors like Firefox that you brought up earlier. So maybe just kind of talk about the hurdles that we need to get across to see broader 64-bit or V8 adoption in both the mobile space and the other markets that you just mentioned, and what ARM's doing to sort of facilitate that software development.
Okay. In terms of the enablement of the ecosystem, we have been, as you do, right, we disclose the architecture in late 2011. A lot of the architectural partnerships that we have in this operating system vendors and key tool chain providers have been aware of what was going on about the architecture even before then. Once we announced the architecture and then we announced the products that are based off of it, we have been consistently providing more tuned models for early software development. We have been actually providing the validation kits for our architectural licensees as well as people around the ecosystem. We also invested a lot into the open source enablement. In around the time we launched the Cortex-A50 series, which was October 2012, we also put the first version of the ARMv8 capable Linux onto the main source tree, as with the ARMv8 capable tool chain for GCC into the source tree. So it's going on a year and a half to two where the ecosystem has had a chance to play with it and develop based off of it. And as now partners announce more platforms available, and there are, as you have seen, platforms already out there in the market that people are designing to, once the hardware gets out there, the ecosystem catches up pretty significantly, having got a bit of start with the tools that we've provided. So on the mobile side, you would argue that this is, you know, an ARM ecosystem. The majority of the software assets, if not most of them, are based on the ARM ecosystem, and you would see the key components moving to ARM with the tools and the bases that we've provided. In the newer markets, I think, as I said, we have partners who have been respected in the space. You talk about people like AMD, you talk about people like LSI, you talk about people like Broadcom, and they're actually ensuring along with us that the software middleware that needs to be in place for the platform to actually succeed in the market are actually getting there too.
Makes sense. So a good example of that would be like a server-based system architecture specification for and the sort of ecosystem work that's going on around that. Is that sort of the type of initiative that you're speaking of?
Yes. I think this is a very good catch. The server-based system architecture is something that builds on what we think is critically required for when I say standardizing, it's more about a statement of actually providing a simple setup where a lot of collaboration can happen with our partnership, and also they can differentiate in their specific points. So the server-based system architecture is something that we have propagated into the open source. It is something that our partners can build off of and have a common setup. And this has an analog in some ways to what happened in the mobile space as well. If you look at a mobile SoC, there are a lot of different components that are integrated in the same platform. At an abstraction layer, you build to that platform, but everything that needs underneath that, the drivers, etc., are provided by the different silicon vendors supplying to it. ASPSA does a very similar thing, providing a common abstraction layer to design to while having different platforms that are tuned to solve different problems around it.
So, I mean, we talked a bit about mobile and a bit about some of the newer markets that ARMv8 brings into ARM's TAM. It's interesting, from an investor's point of view, ARMv8 is sort of one of the tools in the tool belt for ARM to expand the royalty rate that is or the royalty percentage rate that it's able to collect on chip sales that utilize ARM's technologies. Other tools in that belt are Big Little, Mali graphics, attach rates, physical IP, etc. I wonder if you'd speak a bit about ARMv8 and the relationship to those other tools in the tool belt, both in the mobile space and then also in some of these newer markets like server or networking, etc. Do you believe that as many of those other tools in the tool belt apply to those markets? Or maybe they are less applicable given the workload nature in sort of a server or networking space than it might be in mobile.
Okay. So I think ARMv8, as you said, I think it applies across all markets. The natural penetration in some more than others. Big Little as a technology, I think, is a very critical component for mobile. And it's across the range. If you actually notice what was happening, even with the use of 8 Cortex A7s or Cortex A53s, partners are using the benefits of a slightly imbalanced implementation to make sure that you get the performance that you need and the efficiency that you need. So the Big Little technology has taken off in a very big way. And exactly, it's not just a point about premium devices with large scalability, but actually the technology is scaling into mid-range and low-cost devices. You've probably seen the announcement by Samsung at Mobile World Congress that had a 2+4 system, where two Cortex-A15s and four Cortex-A7s coming together, which again is squarely in the mid-range section, and then you see the Cortex-A7, Cortex-A53 devices going into mid-range to low cost. Now the same will be applicable for the ARM V8 versions of products, and in fact, even when we move to more advanced FinFET technologies, Big.Little is a tool that builds on top of, it's not replaced by, it in fact enhances the benefits of it. It is not just mobile now. If you look at energy efficiency, I think it's critical across. You look at home entertainment, you look at DTV, Energy Star becomes a common requirement. You have, even for plug-into-the-wall devices, I think energy efficiency is getting critical. So Big.Little is applicable there. You look at automotive and infotainment, you look at ADAS, where the Cortex-A class products will also apply. It may not be battery operated, but they're thermally constrained. You have a lot more flexibility that you bring with Big.Little there. Interestingly enough, and I'm not going to push it into enterprise networking, but especially server networking are markets that do understand the use of heterogeneous systems. And Big.Little is a heterogeneous system, so the concept or the applicability can be extended beyond, not necessarily in the way it's envisioned for mobile, but the tenets actually apply as well. If you look at Mali and graphics or GPU compute, those are certainly applicable in mobile, again, consumer devices. But when you start looking at high-performance compute, maybe server, again, the computational aspects could utilize GPU compute. Maybe networking infrastructure is probably one of the points where I don't see necessarily the applicability of the GPU compute spectrum, but you never know. Innovation from our partnership always surprises me in a good way.
Indeed. Hearing you speak about V8, it just sort of reminds me of the broad applicability across different end markets, which I guess brings a completely different type of question, which is ARM has done a great job in the past of not only supporting its architectural licensees, but its individual processor licensees, and with maybe a narrower market applicability of ARM V7 and V8, ARM was able to supply processor designs that were applicable across most of the end markets to where V7 was sold. With the broadening of V8 across more end markets, server, networking, etc., how might this change the focus of investment from ARM from say individual processor designs that might not be applicable across all those end markets toward things like ecosystem and software development, etc.? I'm just wondering how you and your team are thinking about investments on the compute side versus, I guess, processor investments versus ecosystem investments going forward and how that might be different.
So I think it's a fair question because it is also a pretty detailed question, so I'll try to address it in the key points. In terms of ecosystem investment, I think it doesn't matter at that point whether it's a processor that's designed by ARM or by an architecture licensee, right? So the software assets and the tool chain, etc., that get built have to run whether it's an ARM-designed processor or not. So the ecosystem investment will continue. And one of the benefits, again, of the business model that we've had is that it is amortized across the set of across the partnership to actually give value to everybody. So ARM has to, in fact, steer and push that ecosystem investment, and we continue to do that. In terms of the investment for design, I think, again, that doesn't change. And if you, in a lot of ways, the ARM's being ahead in the architecture, in fact, driving it, a lot of the investment has already gone in to what we've developed. So when we talk about networking, server, etc., we've been investing for the last few years into cache-coherent networks, these products that are already out there. So the level of investment that we've kind of put into this has already been planned and developed with. We continue to maintain our invest at the levels needed to keep these markets growing. So if you look at what we're doing for mobile, it's consistently growing. For enterprise and server and the infrastructure markets, we've already invested. You've seen us talk about 16 core platforms that are already in the market that are built off of ARM, not just processors, but system IP. We talked about how that would grow to 32 core solutions. Again, we announced that last year. So I think we are continuing to invest just at the same level that we see across all these markets.
I guess the question really comes across, and the prior question was really on ARM's sort of margin structure and investments in the ecosystem. You don't think with the hopefully there are broadening end markets to extract revenue from that would amortize these investments, but you don't see a material increase in the amount that you're going to need to invest to really chase after these new opportunities. I mean, in the past, though, say you've had an A15 processor that's designed by ARM and folks can license it. I wonder in the future if there might be versions of processors that were directed at certain end markets that ARM might put forward, and I guess wonder about the increased investments to support something like that, or do you think that the investments you made in the architecture can make designs that ARM makes applicable to sort of most of the end markets that VA might touch?
Matt, here again, I'll step in if we're going to start getting into sort of margin structure, because that sort of that's more sort of speaking to the overall structure of the business. I think the key thing is that we still expect to be able to drive licensing, drive royalties faster than our costs, and so still leading to increasing margin. I take the point around, do we need to go and build specific processors for specific end markets. I mean, our approach has been always and maintains to still develop very general purpose processors, and to a certain extent, that's one of the benefits of the architecture license, is that if there is a niche market that is completely unique, and our general purpose processors aren't ideal for that, then that's exactly where an architecture license could come in, because someone can then go and build something for that specific market, and so therefore that there's no impact on our overall sort of profitability, because that's just another license. It's already technology that's been developed. There's no extra cost for us to go and address that market with the architecture license.
Thank you for that, and sort of didn't need to jump down the typical financial analyst rat hole there. I guess since this is an investor analyst call, I guess we had to get the numbers at some point. Maybe Nandan or Ian, you guys could sort of remind us again the expected royalty rate expansion for ARMv8 versus V7 versus the comparably configured V7 processor. Is there a way that we should think about looking at the base of that royalty rate going forward? And since we've sort of been discussing here the mix of processor versus architectural licensee shipments, do you see that mix being materially different for V8 going forward than it was for V7? And how do the royalty percentages compare between those two?
So I think, firstly, I may not get into the specifics of the royalties for two reasons. One, it is a simple question but a complex answer. The license fee and the royalty are determined by quite a few factors. Amongst them, the complexity of the technology and the value that is being realized, right? Also, depending on the market and depending on how they turn out, there are, I guess, complexities that I can't talk about. The simple answer I would say is, as the products get more complex and more advanced, the value to the customer and the end market increases, and this is kind of reflected in the pricing. I think that's the best I can say about it. And Ian, if you want to add to
anything. I mean, basically the best way of thinking about it is that Cortex-A53, Cortex-A57, the technologies that are based on the ARMv8 architecture are by far the most complex and sophisticated processors that we've built to date. They've been ARM's biggest investment that we've ever made to date. And the way that we monetize that is through the licensing and the royalties. And so you'd expect that if cost is going up, if value to our customers is going up because we're saving them more money, you'd expect us to expect them to pay some more money for that.
Yes, that seems reasonable. And I guess on the licensing side, then, since we kind of segued there, Don, in your prepared slides, you discussed that the V7 had, say, 130 plus licenses over 80 licensees, and has quite a few iterations of processor designs there. ARMv8 is much newer. Really only two chips have been designed and licensed, but the architecture's been licensed to a broader base. Seems like from the stats I've seen, 30 licenses so far across, say, 20 companies. I just wonder your perspective on sort of what inning we might be in as far as licensing of ARMv8 with the new end markets that it brings to bear. It seems like the licensing potential of the new architecture could potentially be broader. And just love to hear your thoughts on the size of the licensing, say, TAM that you're going after with V8 versus V7 and sort of where we are in that progression.
Okay, so I think you brought up a fair point, right? It's there's a potentially new TAM, there's a potential TAM for what we already have, but I think the best way to describe it is it's early days, right? So we can see the applicability to a lot of these markets, and certainly a lot of partners have licensed the architecture and the product themselves to make plans for addressing these markets. Do we see this as a replacement for V7? I don't think so. There's a lot of markets that will continue to be V7 because you have to realize V7, from an applications processor standpoint, certainly it'll be applicable, but there are also microcontroller side and real-time processing side that will continue there for a while. But I guess the total figure is probably tough to come by, and coming up with a penetration level or a licensing TAM, again, I wouldn't speculate, but I think there will be a broad applicability of ARMv8A to the markets that are served by ARMv7A, and they continue to coexist.
Thanks for that. And I guess it looks like the time sort of flown by here, and sounds like it's pretty close to time to close the call. I really do appreciate, Nandan, you taking the time and giving me the opportunity to host the call. And to Ian and Phil, thanks again. Those who participated on the call on the phone, I hope you found this useful and informative. And you folks know where to find me if you want to follow up. Just pass the call back to Ian. Thanks very much.
Okay. Thank you, Matt. And thank you, Nandan. And thank you for everybody for listening in. Just to let you know that there will be a recording of this call on the website shortly, in case you want to listen again. We'd be very, very keen on your feedback so we can do these calls better in the future. And in fact, the next call is being planned for the end of Q2, when Colin Alexander will be joining us to talk about the opportunity for ARM in enterprise networking. So I hope that you've enjoyed this call, and I hope that you'll dial into the next one as well. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now all disconnect. Speakers, please stand by.